It's time for some free sound advice, courtesy of our gadget detective, Fevzy. Hello, my darling. How are you?
Hello, Alison. I've missed you so.
I've missed you as well.
Where have you been?
I've been ill. Oh, don't get me started. Oh, my gosh. I'll tell you another time about my hashtag norovirus hell. Not that I like to mention it much. But we're here to talk gadgets today. And do you remember, Fevzy, a while ago, we had a text in from someone who was looking for some advice on purchasing a wireless Wi-Fi CCTV camera for their lambing shed.
Yes, I remember.
Well, Janie has got back in touch saying, could you please kindly repeat the advice you gave then and possibly also point them in the right direction regarding reliable makes and supplies? Because, of course, we're very close to the start of the lambing season now.
Yes, okay. So, all right, so the things to look for when choosing a Wi-Fi camera of this sort are, first of all, the quality of images that it can give you. So that's controlled by two things. One is the resolution, that's to say how many dots make up the picture. The more dots, all things being equal, the more quality in the picture. You know, that's important, particularly if you have a camera that can zoom. Then you have the frame rate, so how many frames per second can it generate and can it store. Again, you know, you could have a very high resolution still, but then you only have one a second. It's not going to give you the same sort of flow of information as you know, something that does many frames per second. So those are the things to bear in mind. Be aware, of course, that the higher the resolution, the higher the frame rate, the more storage capacity you will need. So then you have to think about what you want to do with that data. Some of these cameras have got a little micro SD card or an SD card slot on it, so it's a little digital card that can store the data, rather similar to what you get in a digital camera. So you could choose to do it that way, and or you could choose to send that information back, usually wirelessly, either to a computer or some sort of hard disk recording device to actually record that. And what you can get, and you get this in home security systems as well, is you get a hard drive which just, say, gives you the last, for example, 2 weeks, and then after 2 weeks it will go back and record over the first day. So you could get something like that. So there's different things you can do. Look at the the brands, it varies. You look at the specification, because any brand has good and sometimes bad items in their range. I've had particularly good experiences with the D-Link brand, but there are others that are, I'm sure, equally good. But I can tell you that I've had good experiences with D-Link. That's the letter D followed by the word link.
How much are you looking at spending to get something half decent?
Again, it depends. You can go from £50 to several hundred pounds for the camera itself. And then you've got, if you want to have that sort of hard disk space recording, it depends if you want to record or you just want to be able to look at the feed live. If you don't want to look at the feed live, then you don't have to have that sort of recording end of things. Some people, their uses are just, you know, the ability to check it on your smartphone or tablet or PC. That will be enough for some people, but if you need a recording, then that obviously costs more, because you're looking at the hard drive as well.
If you are looking at getting a recording, Janie, I don't know how this would work, we'll ask Fevzy, but it would be fantastic to get the live feed of her lambing camera up on our Facebook page here at BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you could just do it as a live stream, couldn't you? Facebook Live. So,
Janie, let's talk. Let's make this happen, shall we? Let's make your lambs go viral. That's half the problem, though, isn't it, Fevzy? When it comes to buying a gadget, there's so much choice. There's so many options, and you're often asked so many questions that you're just stood there, maybe it's just me, in the shop a little bit baffled, going, I don't know if I want that or if I need that. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And I had this the other day on a call where someone had a Windows laptop. She went into a store and was sold a Chromebook, which Chromebooks are fine, but they're sort of completely different from Windows laptops and won't run the same software, and you'd need to, you know, learn how to use the new apps all over again. So that was an example of someone who didn't understand what they were being sold, and the shop didn't explain it to them. It is tricky. I mean, in terms of the advice, what I try and do is give people the things to think about and the basis of the questions they need to ask. The other way in which you can do it is say, buy this, but that's kind of would result from a sort of slightly longer conversation, I think.
Mm.
So,
but the thing you are great at doing is giving jargon-free advice. You know, you talk in plain English, and that is what we love about you. If you've got a question for Fevzi, do get in touch. The number 03459 570057. And really, there is no such thing as a stupid question, as I am about to illustrate. So, Fevzi, I meant to write down the message that I keep getting up on my laptop at home, but of course I forgot to do that. So it's something along the lines of, I think it's trying to tell me that something's run out, and if I don't do something soon, it's going to stop working because it no longer supports my operating system. Does that mean anything to you?
Okay, that's kind of vague.
Very.
Okay. Well, there's different things that you could run out. I mean, it could be that you've got a version of software on there which needs to be updated in order to remain compatible, or that you've updated the software and it's no longer fully compatible and supported with your operating system. So which operating system are you using, if you don't mind me asking?
I have no idea. Okay.
Is it Windows?
Yes, Windows.
And did it sort of shove you onto Windows 10, do you think, when you weren't looking, or are you more likely to? How old's the machine?
I'm likely not to have updated.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's an old operating system and I probably need to rejig
it. If it is old, so for example, you may have... If you had, for example, Windows XP on there, then
rings a bell.
So that's no longer supported, and you really shouldn't be going onto the internet with the Windows XP machine anymore.
Oh.
Because it's been quite some time now that Microsoft have stopped supporting it. And what that means is that when they discover a vulnerability in the software that could allow some miscreant to take advantage of it and steal your data or your money, they don't patch it. They don't correct it anymore.
Oh, gosh. Well, so what do I need to do?
Well, if you're on Windows XP, you need to upgrade to something like Windows 7 or Windows 10.
And will that cost me money?
Probably yes. Windows 10 upgrades were free up until a point, but that's no longer the case. It doesn't need to cost you a lot of money, but a few tens of pounds.
Right.
Also, bear in mind that if you've got an old version of, for example, Microsoft Office on there, so if you're running, for example, Office 2003, which, frankly, I was running until not that long ago, because it's fine, it does the job, you don't always need to. That is similarly not supported, and that is also what they call an attack vector. That's also a way in for these criminals to get onto systems.
That's the thing, isn't it? You've got to take the time out to keep on top of this stuff and make sure you are upgrading and what have you. Yeah. If you have a question for the Gadget Detective, you can call 03 459 570057. Now, though, we're getting some free sound advice from the Gadget Detective himself. If you've got a question or you just want some advice from Fevzi, you can get in touch. The number 03 459 570057, or you can text 81333. Start your message with the word radio. John's given us a call from Crawley. John, you're through to Fevzi.
Right. Hello, Fevzi, and hello, Alison.
Hi, John.
Hello.
You may or may not be able to answer the question, but I'm far away. I've had a telephone call from someone in Canada. I know who the person is, but unfortunately, because I missed the call, but it came up on my caller display.
Yep.
Okay, so it's a 13-digit number, but obviously that incorporates probably UK access codes. What I'm going to ask you, if possible, by looking at these numbers, could I remove the access code and actually find out the telephone number of the caller?
So is the number that's come up on your caller display the access number?
No, all of it. I have a 13-digit number here, beginning with 00.
Right. And what are the next two numbers, or two or three numbers?
151.
Right. Okay. So that would appear to be the number that's called you.
Yes.
I say it would appear because those numbers can be faked and spoofed by people who are not who they appear to be. So that's always something to be aware of.
Yeah.
Fraudsters. I'm not saying that's the case here.
Oh, no, I actually do know the I know exactly who rang me.
So your difficulty is what? Because that number should be the number that rang you, all things being equal.
No, what I want to know is, to ring the person back,
right,
I need to decide what are the... effectively their telephone number out of this 13 right. numbers.
So you, I understand. So you need to put 00 if you're dialing from a normal line. Well, look, this is not the cheapest way to do it, by the way, but right. if you were to dial it just on a normal sort of BT landline, right. you dial 00, you'd strip out any leading zero from there. So you, the first digits on what you saw were what?
It's 00151.
Okay, I think you could just try and do that.
I think you could. I've just looked it up. The international dialing code to Canada is just 1.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
right, okay.
And then 51 would presumably be the area code.
Area code,
right.
So that should work. So so Canada has the same area code as the United States, it seems.
Right.
So that should allow you to ring it back. However, that's not the cheapest way to do it. It does depend. There are other services, and you would need to sort of search online for these if you have access, where you dial that number first,
right,
and then you hear a message which prompts you to enter the number of the person that you want to speak to,
right,
and they will then agree to charge you for the access number at a reduced rate. So first of all, you need to look at what it would cost you to bring it through BT, but that's not going to be cheap.
Right.
Then Google, cheap calls to Canada,
right.
And it makes you need to know if it's a landline or a mobile that you're ringing, and then you will see advertised online all sorts of different access numbers at 2 p.m. minute, 1 p.m. minute, that sort of thing,
right.
And that's the sort of price range you should be looking at. Some of them don't give the best call quality, so if you dial via one and it's the line is too ropey and it's not usable, then try another service.
Right.
But you know, instead of I don't know what BT charge you for it, but instead of tens of pennies a minute, it should be pennies per minute.
Right, I'm with you.
And low pennies at that. So
if I were to use one of these other providers,
yep.
do I then strip out the 00 on the number that I have in front of me?
It will give you specific instructions when you use a particular service, but generally you would include the access code from the UK for international calls, which is always 00.
Right.
So it would be 00151 and the rest of the number. By the way, a good place to start on this is the Money Saving Expert website. If you've got access to that,
yes.
They have an article that deals with making international calls cheaply. You can, if it's something also that you needed to do regularly, you can get subscriptions to things like Skype. So although Skype allows you to make computer to computer and device to device calls for free, you can also use it to call from your device, be it a laptop or smartphone or tablet,
right.
to a normal landline in return for a subscription. Yeah, and they have ones for Europe and worldwide. And worldwide, you know, gives you free to landlines and mobiles included in your subscription.
That's lovely.
Okay.
Yes, thank you very much.
John,
hope
that
helps. Thank you so much. Another John now. Is it possible to have an offline computer and connect only when you want to?
Well, at the point it's connected, it ceases to be an offline computer, I guess. Yes, you can do that. I mean, there are people now who do what's called air gapping, which is to have a computer that never connects to the internet, and they do that for security reasons. Doesn't always work. The recent breach of CIA data, according to Julian Assange, came from an air gapped computer system in the CIA. So it doesn't always work, but that's one way that people use to try and keep their computer secure. But the problem with that is that if you are going to connect even occasionally, then you're not really much safer if that's your objective, because at that point you'll have to then make sure that you go ahead and update all your software to make sure it's got all the latest fixes for different bugs and vulnerabilities, as we spoke of before, and then you have to, you know, as soon as you're online, you know, you are potentially vulnerable. So yes, it's possible to do, but if security is the objective, then I don't think that's markedly safer than a machine that's on and kept up to date, you know, frequently.
If you have a question for the Gadget Detective, you can call 03 459 57 0057. Your breakfast team's back with you first thing tomorrow morning. Now, though, we're talking to Fevzi, the gadget detective. If you've got a question or you just want some advice, gadget related, you can call 03 459 57 0057. So earlier, Fevzi, I mentioned this new smartphone with split screen capability.
Yes, I liked this. So this was announced by LG, which is also a South Korean company, rather like Samsung. LG used to stand for Lucky Gold Star, by the way. And they...
Information you thought you never knew you needed to know.
Can't imagine why they would have changed it just to LG. You know, who wants a TV that's got Lucky Gold
Lucky
Star?
Lucky Gold Star.
Now, LG are one
it's
of
like
the...
It's like a Chinese takeaway. Anyway.
So LG are one of the leading manufacturers of screens that go into devices such as smartphones and tablets. And in fact, very often you find that the likes of Apple and other big brands will use LG screens. So they're a major competitor to Samsung, and of course they do TV sets as well. They announced at the Mobile World Congress this year in Barcelona their new flagship device. It's called the LG G6, as in Generation 6, and it's got this very interesting feature. The screen, when you look at it, is taller than a normal screen, and by that I mean the aspect ratio, so the ratio of the height to the width. So it's 18:9 instead of 16:9. Now, why would you want a taller screen? It is because in the most recent version of the Android software that Google produced for all these different phones, they have a split screen capability, the ability to turn the phone on its side. So what was a taller screen is now a wider screen.
So sort of landscape.
Yeah,
mode,
exactly landscape. And have two square windows side by side on there showing different things. And that's really useful. So you can have two different apps running alongside each other side by side. You could, for example, have on the left side a music album's artwork and the play controls on one side, and on the other side you could have a list of songs that the album contains. So you know, you could do things like that. So it's kind of clever that they've done this, and it's the first one that takes advantage of this new feature inside Android. So it's a nice screen. The other nice thing about it is, it other than Google's own Pixel phone, this is the first third-party phone to include Google's new assistant, which is their competitor to Siri and indeed Alexa. So Siri from Apple, Alexa from Amazon, and Google have their own assistant.
What's she called? Do we know?
I think she's just called Google Assistant.
Oh.
I know, it's not very personal, is it?
No, it's not.
But she's very smart. Google, it's quite interesting, this, with the personal assistants, because Google is not known for, you know, greatly respecting the, you know, our private information. Their whole business model is predicated on, you know, capturing as much information about us as they can, mm-hmm. and monetizing that by using that to sell more and more targeted advertising, and they do very well at it. Whereas Apple's business model is they sell you expensive devices, but they're not particularly interested in collecting and selling your data. So it depends what's more important to you. But because Google have this big repository of data, this sort of big data as it's called, their assistant is actually smarter than Siri. Siri is relatively dumb, because Siri doesn't...
Don't let her hear you say that.
It's like a personal assistant. If your personal assistant knows everything about you and what you like and what your habits are and all the rest of it, then that person is able to be a better assistant, to anticipate your needs before you even articulate them. And that's what Google Assistant is more prone to be able to do. Whereas Siri is more like an assistant who doesn't really like to pry into your personal business, and therefore has to be told more specifically about what's wanted. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, it's this sort of, we've talked about it many times, this balance between privacy on the one hand and convenience on the other hand. It's very convenient to have a really on the ball assistant who anticipates your needs and meets them before you even know you have them. But on the other hand, isn't it good to have some degree of privacy?
If you have a question for Fevzi, you can get in touch. The number 03 459 57 0057. I'm just laughing because I'm just reading an article where they've put Google Now, this Google Assistant, up against Apple Siri.
Yeah.
And asked different questions. So, for example, they asked Apple Siri, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? It doesn't actually say here, though, what answer Siri came up with.
Yeah.
But they went on then to ask Siri different Grimsby area information. To be fair, this was the Grimsby Telegraph who carried out this experiment. Therefore, they obviously got an interest in Grimsby thing. And you're right. The conclusion, Google Now is brighter than Siri, knows more.
Yeah, and Google Now is the forerunner to Google Assistant, actually.
Google Assistant will know even more.
Yeah. No, it will. And also, one of the things that Google Assistant is better at and Siri is relatively poor at is understanding the context. So if I said to you, you know, who is the President of the United States, okay, you or the assistant could answer. And then if I followed up with the question, when was he born? Now, you would understand that I meant
Donald Trump.
Yeah. But Siri doesn't always get that. It doesn't get the context of a question. It just treats them as individual questions.
Oh, gosh, it's all too clever for its own good. You can get in touch with Fevzi if you've got a question. You can text 81333, start your message with the word radio. You can also have a listen back to Fevzi's podcast. How can people do that?
Well, you can look it up. It goes out on Five Live, so you can get it there, or you can go to Audioboom. If you go to audioboom.com/gadgetdetective, you will find there the recent podcasts.
And you can also tweet Fevzi at Gadget Detective, and he'll be more than happy to offer some jargon-free, plain English advice. Fevzi, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Pleasure's mine. Thanks.